this evening as we continue our series in Exodus. And we're going to do the second half of our study in the equipping or the calling of Moses. We're calling it the making of a leader. It's part two, but it's not really about leaders only. It's the making of us, how God shapes us and equips us and moves in our lives. Last week, we focused in on Moses' natural abilities and the advantages of his upbringing that he had, but then saw at the end, at the age 40, the big 4-0, rather than being the kickoff place for him, it was actually at that point in his life, he was a washed up failure. Having to run away and living as a shepherd in the back end of nowhere. That was where he left him, but God wasn't finished with him and used all of those experiences and further experiences to shape Moses, to develop him and to refine him. And it reminded me, as I thought again of this week, it reminded me of Romans chapter 8 and that famous verse at the end of the chapter there where it says that in all things God works for the good of those that love him. It's critical for us to keep that in mind. It's easy for us to trot that verse out, but we need to hold on to that even in the darkest times when we can't see God's hand. You know the footprints poem, and you look back and there's one set of footprints. That's a great allegory, a great picture. But in those times when God is holding us, God is shaping us, God is moving even when we can't see it. And then as we get to this point tonight, we'll see the next stage of Moses' development. So let's just read a few verses here in chapter 3 of Exodus. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Just note here, in case I forget to say it as we go through tonight or in the future, Horeb was in the same mountain range as Sinai. Just keep that in mind. It's the same mountain range as where Abraham was called to sacrifice his son. It's the same area, and this mountain is particularly significant. So he led him and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that the bush was on fire. Although the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, "Oh, go over there and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up." When the Lord saw that he'd gone over to look, God called him. God called to him from within the bush, "Moses, Moses." And Moses said, "Here am I." Well, here I am. "Do not come any closer," God said. "Take off your sandals, for the place where you're standing is holy ground." Then he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, "I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard their crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, the Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said to him, "I will go with you, and this will be a sign to you that it is I that have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain." Moses said to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me,' and they ask me, 'Well, what is his name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the God, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I am to be remembered from generation to generation. Go, assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt. And I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt, and into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. The elders of Israel will listen to you. Then you and the elders are to go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a 3-day journey into the desert to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. And I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed towards this people, so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and every woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put on your sons and daughters, and so you will plunder the Egyptians. I'm just going to go on a little bit further. Moses answered, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? And the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back to a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has appeared to you. And it goes on. This interaction between God and Moses, as God calls him. As we read this, and perhaps you know that as it goes on, Moses keeps going back and saying, but Lord, I can't do that. Later on in chapter 4, he says, but God, I can't talk. I never have been. I'm useless. We can't help but notice how chronically insecure Moses has become. That first failed attempt to do something for his people really seems to have hit Moses and knocked every bit of confidence out of him. And 40 years later, he's still struggling with this chronic self-doubt and insecurity. You know what? I tell you, that makes me feel a whole load better. Because it's all right to read of these people who can do this and can do that, and these wonderful people who kind of just pray prayers and things happen for them, and they're able to do great things. You know, you read the books, and say, oh, I wish I was like that. But my life is not like that, and I don't feel like that. I don't know about you. See, I don't feel that I can stand and do much. I have no sense of trust in myself. I've lived long enough to know I can't trust myself. I quake pretty much every time I come into church to do this. You might not believe that, but I do. To be the leader of a church and to think that God has kept me doing this for 30 years, to me that's staggering. I would never have thought that. And still today I struggle with it. And I say that because I hope that kind of encourages some of you. Because I know that some of you will feel the same way. I don't know if all of you do, but I know some of you do. So let's look tonight at what happened in Moses' life that finally got this man who thought, I can't do this, God, that got him to the place where he would go and speak to Pharaoh. What was it that happened? Well, the simple answer is that he met with God. And that was the key thing. He met with God, and God spoke to him, and he spoke with God, and he heard from God, and he listened to what God said. And that is what made the difference. And it's the same that makes a difference for each of us. And I'll show you, hopefully, by the help and the grace of God tonight, how that works out. I want to look for our encouragement at a series of interactions between Moses and God and see how God answers each of Moses' objections. There were three main objections that Moses had. The first one is this sense of doubt that he had, this self-doubt. And the answer to that, when we feel the same, is, and we see it here, is confidence in God's presence with us. In chapter 3, verse 10, the Lord comes to Moses, and he said, "Now go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." Moses' response was, "But who am I?" And God's answer to Moses in verse 12 is kind of what he says, "I will be with you and this will be a sign to you." But it's like, look, Moses, don't worry about who you are. Think about me. I will be with you. But that doesn't satisfy Moses. And later on we read in verse 13, that he says, "But what if the Israelites won't listen to me? What if they want to know who sent me? What shall I say to them?" I found it interesting that Moses' concern and his fear was for the Israelites. It wasn't Pharaoh. It was his own people. How often we're worried about people. What they'll say. Moses' concern was the Israelites, his own family. He says, "What shall I tell them?" "Well, tell them that I am sent you," he says in verse 14. "Tell them that I am sent you." You see, other nations had their gods, and all the other nations had gods. Their gods had names. But the God of the Israelites at that point didn't have a name. He was the God of... How many times did it come back in there? You've already got thought, kind of gets a bit repetitive after. The God of your forefathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Their God didn't have a name. It's your family God. But he didn't have a name. "Who shall I say? What is your name? Who's sending me?" "Tell them, I am. That's my name. That's the name you're to know me by." And the "I am" conveys the idea of someone who always is. Who always has been, the ever-present I am, always the same, the self-existent one. This was the Israelites' God. I think many times we can identify with Moses' feelings. Who am I? Not just in church ministry, not just in specific kind of what we might think of spiritual ministry, but in any situation. It could be at home, or it could be in the community. Who am I? You know, things come to us and we have to take up a responsibility. We have to deal with a situation. And we think, how can I do it? Who am I to do this? The answer is the same for us as it was with Moses. It's not about who am I, but whose am I? Who is my God? Who do I belong to? Truth is that so often we forget and we focus on what we can't do and we forget what God can do. We think about ourselves rather than him. And we live our life thinking about our limitations rather than God and his abilities. We tend not to take God into account. That seems to be a default position sometimes. The secret is to lift our eyes, to stop looking at ourselves and to look to our God. Paul reminds us in his letter to the Romans, Romans chapter 8 again, says, "If God be for us, if God is for us, then," can anybody finish the verse? "If God is for us, who can be against us?" And then we have to stop and think, If God is for us, we call him God. He's the I Am. This is Yahweh. This is the God of that bit of Andromeda. This is the God of the universe. If God is for us, you see, we've got to keep in mind who God is, who the Lord is. If the Lord is for us, if the Lord is for you, if he's on your side, who else? Everybody else comes under him. Everybody else is under his control. God is with us. God is for us. He's revealed that in Jesus. He's given us the Holy Spirit. The answer to Moses' self-doubt is confidence that God is with us. And it's the same for us as well. God is with us. God. Remember who he is. God, the Lord, I Am. Second thing, Moses had a great fear of rejection. See, Moses was afraid. He was afraid of, I can see at least two things in the passage. He was afraid of being rejected by the Israelites. What if they don't listen to me? What if they question me? You know, what if they don't believe that I've come or won't listen to me? And he had a fear of failure. What if I can't do this? What if it goes pear-shaped? And again, I suspect that most, if not all of us, can identify with that fear. What is God's answer to this? Well, the answer to fear of rejection is confidence in not just God being with us, but it's the answer is found in the confidence in God's power. So in chapter 4, we just started to read, where God gives him the ability to perform real magic. The staff turns to snake, to a snake. He throws his little stick on the ground. It turns to a snake. If we'd have read on, he says, put your hand in your cloak. And he puts his hand in the cloak and he take it out again. It comes out and it's covered with leprosy, a white illness. And he says, okay, now put it back in again. And he puts it back in his coat. Now take it out and it's back to normal. They were demonstrations of God's power intended to convince Moses and intended to convince that Moses and the people that God is indeed with them, that there was power here. How does this work out in our life, in our context? Because last time I tried throwing a stick down to impress people, nothing happened. We don't see things like that these days, do we? Have you ever found yourself thinking, if only God would do something? If only something would happen? If only X, Y, or Z, then it would be so much better. It's hard, isn't it, to speak to people about Jesus very often. In a recent survey that I heard this week, Of under 50s that were polled, 50% of them said they either don't believe in God or don't know what they believe at all. So they're either atheist or agnostic. Wouldn't it be good if we could do some miracles like Moses to impress these people? That'd be great. I'm sure that except that they wouldn't believe. You know who the greatest miracle worker of all was? It was Jesus. And you know what happened to Jesus, don't you? They killed him. But even these miracles didn't convince people of Jesus. If somebody has got a mindset of unbelief, they're not going to believe. If somebody doesn't want to, you could do anything. They will always, and you know this, you've found it. You've lived long enough. You know that if they don't want to believe, they're not going to believe. Nothing that you can say, nothing that you can do will change their minds. So I want to encourage you tonight that real power isn't found only in healing. And I've seen some things happen. I've seen and I've read of some things, as many of you will have done as well, of some wonderful things that God has done. And I will continue to pray for people to be healed. unashamedly, I'll continue to pray for that because I believe that God has got the ability to do it. And if he wants to do it, and if it's going to be for his glory, he will do it. But let's never think that if God does that, then loads of people are going to become Christians. It won't work like that. It never has and it never will. He does it because that's his nature and because he's gracious to sometimes answer those prayers. We've got to wait to heaven till everything is put back right. But I'll tell you where real power is. Romans chapter 1 verse 16 says, and it's the Apostle Paul that says this, he says, I am not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes. The greatest example of God's power is a changed life. It's changed your life. If it hasn't, it should have done. And it will change others. When they believe in Jesus, it will change their life. When they truly believe, when they truly take him as he is, it will change their lives. Jesus said, and this has come to me so powerfully this year, and I'm sorry if it sounds repetitive, but I think it's a message that God wants to give to us as a church. I've come that you might have life. Jesus said, I've come to set the captive free. I've come to release the oppressed. Not so that you could just carry on the same. I've come to make a difference. So if a difference isn't there, then something is wrong. The power of God brings salvation, rescue, release, and freedom to those who believe it. So when it feels that people are rejecting you, just remember this. They're not actually rejecting you. They're rejecting God. Because the power isn't in you and your persuasion or whatever it is to convince other people. The answer to the fear of rejection is to remember God's power and to remember that he can take your word. So if you're thinking, dare I say anything? Will they believe me? Maybe they won't like it. Maybe they'll reject me. Remember this. They're not rejecting you. It will be God that they're rejecting. And very closely related to the fear of failure is the last thing about Moses, is this sense of inadequacy. And the answer to a sense of inadequacy is confidence in God's help. But Lord, he said in verse 10 of chapter 4, he said, but Lord, you know that I'm no good with words. I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you've spoken to your servant. I'm slow of speech and of tongue. Moses, do you remember when you were back in Egypt? What was his reputation? What was it said of him? It was said of him that he was mighty in word and deed. Now, either Moses is having a meltdown of confidence or something really has happened. It doesn't matter. Moses felt that he was no longer able to talk. He could hardly string, he said, two words together. How on earth was he going to convince Pharaoh to let the people go? God's answer to him is, have you forgotten where the gift of speech comes from? Go, and I will give you the things to say. I'll teach you what to say. Moses didn't need to worry whether he'd be able to convince Pharaoh. God would do the convincing. God would give him the words to say. Sometimes it's not simply, but people won't believe me. But sometimes we'll think, but I don't know what to say. Man, how many times do I go into that situation? I'm going to see someone and they've had bad news. I'm going to see someone in hospital. What do I say? And so often I'll pray. As I'm going along in the car, Lord, just give me a word. And I'll sit in the car park at the hospital and I'll just pray, Lord, what is it? Is there a particular word? And the number of times I thought, okay, that's the passage. And I'll go in and it turns out that's just what somebody needed to hear. I'll give you an example of it, if I may. Just recently with Roger, went to go see Roger the Monday before he died. He died on a Friday. On the Monday, went up to see him. Lord, what do you want me to say? And I felt led to a particular passage. And it was not a passage that I'd normally that I would normally read to someone who was facing, you know, non-recovery of illness, knowing that they were going to die. It's a passage that I'll probably speak on at his funeral from Hebrews chapter 2. It was about not being afraid of death. I'd not really come across it before. Jesus died to set free those who've lived their whole lives in slavery to the fear of death. And I read it to him. And Marilyn said, that's amazing. She said, that's exactly the passage that was in our readings yesterday. He'd had it twice in 2 days. God gives us the things to say. And so often it's, what am I going to say? Let's not forget about God. And sometimes we're not even aware of it. When I'm preaching particularly, this happens quite often. I don't know what I've said. And somebody will come up and they'll say, Stuart, that was just a word. Sometimes some of you have said that. And maybe it's not been on the main subject. You know, I know what I think the Lord needs to say, or what I want him to say. And somebody will say, thank you, Stuart, what you said there. And I'm thinking, but that's been the bit that God has taken. Is it only pastors and preachers that God does this to? No, not at all. He does it to all of us. Jesus said to his disciples that when they were taken and they had to find somebody to say, the Holy Spirit would give them words to say. Our sense of inadequacy and confidence in God's help. Trust God to help you. Trust God to give you the words when you need them. And even if the words to you seem quite inadequate, those words can have an explosive, dynamic power when they're in the hands of God to people's lives. God will help you say just enough for him to work with. But still Moses isn't done, and he says, can't you send someone else? Chapter 4, verse 13. And by now God is starting to get cross with Moses because of his relentless excuses. And he says, okay, look, I'll give Aaron, your brother, who'll go with you, and he'll speak when necessary. Though it's interesting to notice that as you go through the story, actually, from Moses saying, I can't speak, and God said, okay, I'll give you Moses, actually it ends up that Moses does most of the talking. He helps him when it comes to it. But this is the kind of reassurance that God gives. He gives us other people sometimes. Sometimes he'll give us a direct word. Sometimes he'll give someone else. And there are times when you think, I don't know what to say. And there are times like that, and I don't know what to say, but I'll say, look, here's somebody that does. Sometimes I'll give somebody a book. Sometimes I'll give them a CD. Sometimes I'll point them to a website. These other people that can help us. And for you, sometimes you might not know what to say. Somebody will ask you a question. You don't know how to answer it. But you have got resources. You don't remember the old AA? Some of us of a certain age can remember the old AA advert where it says, I can't, but I know a man who can. It's like that with us. I can't, but I know a man who can. I can't, but I know a man who can. Maybe just point them to Jesus. Or maybe, I know somebody who can help you. I know somebody who's equipped to answer these questions. It might be me. It might not be me. It might be somebody else who you know has got some skill and some understanding. It might be a lady. It doesn't have to be a bloke. You know, God puts us in a group of people to help each other. But we do need to talk. There is a popular saying among some that says, preach the gospel, when necessary, use words. Now, I know the sentiments of that. But the gospel is, in its essence, a message. And the message has to be spoken. So I encourage you tonight not to be ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for salvation. Moses had got some natural abilities that God was able to use. But it wasn't Moses' abilities, it was God that did it. It was God speaking through him. It was God taking his words. The answer to our doubts, our fears, and our inadequacies always is confidence in God. In God being with us, in God's power working through us, and it's confidence in God's help with us in the time that we need us. And if that was true for Moses, and it's true for us. So let's not be ashamed. Let's not be afraid. Let's be courageous. Let's take the opportunities that come up. And just say something. And that something will be the power of God that he will take for him to use to change somebody's life in the Lord Jesus. So the making of a leader, this is what happened in Moses' life. Many of us are not called to be leaders. But then in another sense we are, because we're God's people in the place that he's put you. In your home, in your neighborhood, in your place of work, in your friendship group, in your community. And as many of you know, community is not just around, could be an online community. God has put you there to speak for him. I pray that God will give us the confidence in him and his word. Not to be ashamed, but to speak and step out and go for him. Let's sing a song as we finish.